You're listening to Cinema Jaw.
Sounds good.
Is that really the level?
Pretty much.
Okay. That you always
I know. Desire. Then he gets really excited.
No, that's going to be the level.
Okay.
You're listening to Cinema Jaw, guys. Just letting you know. You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location on Division Street in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Ry, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we celebrate the year of 2012 in film with our top 10 movies of 2012.
This is an annual tradition here at Cinema Jaw, isn't it?
It is, and it's so typical of us that last week we already did our preview of 2013 before we could really capture 2012.
Yeah, that's us. That's our style.
Yeah, it sure is. In addition to going over our top 10s, we are also just going to sort of celebrate the year by picking out our top 3 favorite deaths.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, Rye.
We also have our top 3 movie lines of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Plus our top 3 hidden gems of 2012.
And just a point of clarification, when you say our top 3 deaths, you mean in movies, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Good.
Why, is there somebody that actually died that made you really happy?
Maybe. But I'm not naming names, okay?
All right.
No, there's nobody. I would never. That's low.
In addition to all that, we have Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore on a new film called Broken City, theater review of Zero Dark Thirty, DVD review of The Queen of Versailles, plus a cinema war looking at who got the bigger snub when it came to the Oscar nominations.
And you always forget the movies I watched. Whoa. I saw This Is 40 in the theater.
That's because you never see movies, Matt.
I tweeted it, dude.
Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah.
Plus, you caught Django, so I can't wait to hear your opinion on that.
It was a double feature weekend, dude.
Jam-packed episode, Matt.
Yes.
So we get started with Eye for an Eye, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
MoviePass.
The best thing about MoviePass, Matt, is you can see an unlimited amount of movies in the theater for one low price, as low as $29.99 a month.
And you know what else? Cinema Jaw listeners get to save $15 when they go to moviepass.com/cinemajaw. Enter the offer code CinemaJaw. Save $15 off your first month. Boom.
That is awesome.
I know.
And all the theaters in Chicago is accepted with MoviePass, so definitely check it out. It's awesome.
Yeah, and all the theaters across the nation, we should mention. So,
and we thank them for their sponsorship of Cinema Jaw.
Thank you, MoviePass.
Broken City. An ex-cop trailing the wife of the New York City mayor finds himself immersed in a larger scandal. The film stars some heavyweights with the likes of Russell Crowe, Mark Wahlberg, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Jeffrey Wright. Matt, interested or ignore on Broken City?
The fact that I'm thinking about it this long, I'm just going to have to go with ignore. Wait, are there superheroes in this? Are there zombies?
There are no zombies and no superheroes.
Yeah, it's kind of sounds boring.
Definitely ignore. I also am giving this one an ignore.
The last time I saw a good CIA, well, I shouldn't say good. I saw The Good Shepherd.
Yeah, this isn't CIA. This is New York City mayor.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
See, that's how much I think of this movie. You lost me completely.
You know, from the trailer, judging from it, this is like Mark Wahlberg is spying on Russell Crowe's wife, and then he gets tied up in the whole triangle, and Russell Crowe ends up sending some henchmen to kill Mark Wahlberg. Yada, yada. It just seems...
Silly,
and not going to lie, the January release of the film raises eyebrows right away, because this is when the studios just let their garbage go.
I do like me some Mark Wahlberg, though, man.
Every once in a while, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, he's pretty good, but yeah, that synopsis does not pique my interest.
No. Two strong ignores for Broken City. Now, I did get out to the theater, and I caught Zero Dark Thirty. Elias, roll clip number one.
Can I be honest with you? I am bad news. I'm not your friend. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to break you. Any questions?
Maya, this is Joseph Bradley, our station chief.
Nice to meet you.
You too, sir.
You don't think she's a little young for the hard stuff?
Washington says she's a killer.
This brilliant new film from acclaimed director Kathryn Bigelow does a lot right and very little wrong. It tells the story of the 10-year manhunt for Osama bin Laden. The film opens up with a dark screen as we hear some of the terrifying calls from people in the World Trade Center on that horrific day back in September 2001.
Of course it does.
Over the next 2.5 hours, Matt, we follow an accurate portrayal of how the CIA finally found and killed public enemy number one. Jessica Chastain plays Maya, a young woman who we find out was recruited out of high school by the CIA. She devotes all her time trying to find bin Laden. The movie does not hide the fact that the U.S. tortured people to get information. We see a man get waterboarded up close. Information is slowly revealed, which leads the CIA to their next lead, which hopefully directs them to another lead and so forth. Although we know how this ends, the film plays out like a tense thriller. We realize how much went into this manhunt. By the time SEAL Team 6 deploys for the compound in Pakistan, I was on the edge of my seat. The last 30 minutes is probably the best 30 minutes of film I've seen all year. I appreciate that the movie did not tell you how to feel. Like a great piece of art, it presents itself and lets the viewer soak it in and come to their own conclusion. That applies to the torture issue and the manhunt itself. Chastain is powerful in here. I loved how her character develops as the movie goes on. At first, she seems out of place, Matt, but as the years go on, she is stern and unyielding. The final scene of the movie involving Jessica Chastain is just perfect. This is a must-see movie. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 4 Jaws.
Now, I must admit, I have not seen it yet. I think, Elias, you did see it, correct?
Hello, Engineer Elias chiming in here.
He is out of the jaw box early, folks.
All right. Yeah, I did see it, and I'm going to have to disagree. Well, maybe I don't. Here's the thing. Maybe you could tell me your opinion on this. Let's say it was just a fictional movie and it was just some random
Wait. It is a fictional movie.
No. Okay, hold on. Like, let's say it was just some, like, just some random made-up bad guy. Like, it had nothing to do with 9/11. Let's say that. Do you think it would still be a good movie?
I do.
Okay, but a great movie, a 4 Jaw movie.
I agree. Probably not a 4 Jaw.
Yeah,
there's definitely an element of the timing of this movie.
Yeah.
You see it in the ads, I think somebody says, comes across the screen, the movie of the times, that, you know.
Yeah, and that's
the movie of the moment.
It's war porn.
And I thought the...
seen it, though, so I should shut up.
And I'm not trying to be, I don't know the right word, but careless about this. But the first 30 seconds was just so cheesy to me. Like,
oh,
just
no.
Pulling on the heartstrings, like just a black screen and random calls from 9/11. It's like, this is obvious. This is exactly what they want. You
but
know.
This is actually where the manhunt begins. You start where it all happened.
I
mean, this event is what caused the next 10 years of pursuing Osama.
Well, why couldn't they start off with him like hanging out with the Bushes, you know?
Or maybe even just, interesting.
Hey.
Or just like showing like maybe some like short clip or something like that, but not just a black screen. And anyway, it felt like that movie theater thing that they play before the movies with the cell phone ringing and the kids crying and everything's going on. But besides that, it just felt like there was a lot of interesting stuff. But again, it was because it's truth. You know, it's based on real life. It felt like it was a documentary almost. I didn't feel like I was being entertained as much as I was entertained by the true story. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, but wait a second. Let's get this out into the open, because there's a lot of reviews that I've read that are pointing to this fact. This is not a documentary. Most of the documents about what actually happened in that mission are completely classified.
Well, yeah, but they have had access to a lot more than most people when it comes to filmmakers. They had access to...
They let Catherine Bigelow in?
Yes, they did. Catherine Bigelow and a couple of advisors on the film were it was controversial because people thought they were making almost like a pro-Obama movie early on. Like Fox News and the Republicans didn't want this movie out before the election because they thought it would be so powerful that the Obama administration was giving them access to sort of get the facts right.
Yeah.
And so that part's interesting, but also there's a lot of talk going on about the torture scenes. And again, it comes up sort of the moral question, is torture, you know, should we condone it? And U.S.'s stance on this. And I think a lot of people, without seeing the movie, think that the film is actually saying torture's fine and it was a good way to get information. And my point in my review was I don't think... That would have been the easy way to go, is to make you feel a certain way about it. But it just really presented it for what it was. This is what happened. This is what took place. And
make
you
your
make up your mind. And I think that's exactly the ending of the film. I thought I was just going to feel like elated at when they finally get to Osama bin Laden. And that isn't the case necessarily. It's a different type of feeling. And that last scene with Jessica Chastain, it's powerful because it's like, wow, everything that went into this to get this one man,
right.
You know, was it worth it for everything? that took place to get this guy.
Right, which I agree. That's the feeling at the end I got, too. I was like, that was great, that learning all this stuff that happened to get to that point. But again, that's just more of somebody could have just told me that story, you know, and I would have been just as amazed almost. You know what I mean? Like, so as a film, it's just... I just kind of unnecessary.
And see, the ending with SEAL Team 6 at the compound, I felt like I was there, like I was on the floor. It was extremely well done.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. The trailer makes it seem like it's going to be some Hollywood badass thing where they just, you know, bust open the door and then like the spray them like crazy with bullets or something, because they have that one shot in the trailer where you see the night vision and all the laser sights or whatever from their guns. But it's a lot more slow moving, but it was still cool. Yeah, and I agree that was entertaining. But
now I gave it 4 Jaws. Elias, what would you give it?
I'm trying to think if I should honor it with my 3.14 Jaws.
You're gonna give it pie again?
No, I'd give it a 3 Jaws.
3 Jaws.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to see it tomorrow, guys. So
I'm going to join Matt. I'm going to go alongside Matt to see it a second time.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
It is going to pop up pretty high on my top 10 list, so can't wait to get to it.
Interesting.
Well, there is a scene in there, and I'll just allude to it. I tweeted this out, but there's a guy who gets shoved inside of a box, and you'll see it. And I was saying that's reminded me very much of my jaw box condition.
And speaking of that, get back in your box, Elias.
We'll have to get that audio clip.
Now, Matt, you got out to the theater. You saw This Is 40. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so not nearly as heavy as Zero Dark 40, but or 30. This is Zero Dark 40. Paul Rudd, Leslie Mann, in the spiritual sequel to Knocked Up. I think that I liked it, first of all. I'll just say that I liked it. There's a few laugh-out-loud moments, but for the most part, I think it's more of a kind of a feel-good movie. The kids are hilarious, especially good performances from the two little girls that play their kids. And I think the overall story of it could make this movie into one of those timeless classics that really hangs around for a long time. We revisit again and again. They should have made it a Christmas movie. Really don't have too much to take out of this, except for they went for that one gross out scene with Paul Rudd, you know, because they had to do something like they did in Knocked Up. Mm-hmm. And it was okay, but you could tell that they were trying to do that on purpose and go for shock value. And it really kind of took me out of the movie. That was the one thing that was out of place, but it was a really short scene. So overall, I say if you're between the ages of, especially if you're between the ages of 35 and 45, this movie will speak to you. And even more so if you have a couple of kids. Great movie. I really enjoyed it. So I'd give it, this is a 3 Jaw movie.
Nice.
It's a recommend. Go see it.
I want to check this one out. Nice.
It's not going to blow your knock your socks off, but it's good.
And you also got out to see Django Unchained, which I reviewed here last week on Cinema Jaw. I gave it 3.5 Jaws. Could have been a perfect 4 Jaw, but I said it went about 20 minutes too long.
Yeah. So, okay. First of all, I liked it a lot. And I would give it 4 Jaws. That was a 4 Jaw movie experience. Although I will say this, if it had been made by anybody other than Quentin Tarantino, I would be saying that was the best movie of the year. But because it was Quentin Tarantino, I don't know, maybe I just expect more from him or something.
Wow, you put him on that high of a pedestal.
I do. But that being said, it was a fantastic movie. But I'm curious as to where you think it went too long, because I thought it ended perfectly.
You know, I you had this huge climactic scene where you had Leonardo DiCaprio and Christoph Waltz. I wish they could have tied the ending in to the last time we
then
see those
of,
two characters.
It sort of slows down again,
and then we have another climax, which I don't think touches the ending of Jamie Foxx, Christoph Waltz, Leonardo DiCaprio, all on DiCaprio's plantation. That was really the highlight. That's about as high as the movie got, and I don't think they needed to go that extra 20 minutes.
I see your point. I don't know if I completely agree, because I think that was the climax of the movie, but that doesn't mean there can't be another scene that's the resolution.
True.
So,
but the movie is pretty long. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I just think all that action that takes place as the climax that I'm speaking of, they could have just wrapped it all up right then. That's just how I felt.
Yeah. Okay. I get it now.
Still gave it 3.5 Jaws. Still liked it. And I did want to mention, because we were talking about some of our favorite scenes I wanted to bring up of 2012.
Oh,
and
cool.
One of them, there's actually a couple of them in Django. I love, obviously, the Christoph Waltz DiCaprio dinner scene. Fantastic. But also, how about the Ku Klux Klan?
Really, you like that scene?
Oh, it was hilarious.
With Jonah Hill?
It was hilarious.
See, that did not work for me in this movie at
all.
I mean,
they couldn't see out of the hoods. And it's so true when you really think about it. Could you ride a horse with a hood on at night? It was hysterical.
Yeah, it was funny, but it didn't seem, it it seemed like all of a sudden I was watching like Superbad or something.
Elias wants to pop out of his box again. I can see him over there.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like it was hilarious, but it stuck out like a sore thumb almost. It was a random Blazing Saddles scene or something like that. Like
it didn't fit with the tone of the rest of the film.
It didn't. It was hilarious though.
And I think it was too good of a scene to just cut. You know, I think he probably wrote this scene and it was so funny. It's like I gotta put this in there.
It was pretty funny. My wife went through all the trouble of making these bags. I'm going home.
Does anybody else got any extra bags? There's no extra bags.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. So you give it 4 Jaws, Django?
Yeah, Django, absolutely. 4 Jaws.
Awesome. I mean, awesome. I gave it 3.5. Matt gives it 4. What do you guys think, Jawheads? Shoot us a tweet, @CinemaJaw. Let us know what you thought of Django Unchained. Brings us to our big segment here. Our top 10 films of 2012. Matt, you're getting a start at this
week. So how do you want to do this? Do you want to go 10 through 5 rapid fire?
No. Go really quick so that we don't go too long. But start us off at number 10.
All right, number 10 for me. I'm a big fan of documentary. I think probably one of the best documentaries of the year is Euro Dreams of Sushi.
Wow, this shocks me that it's on your list.
And honestly, I did not like it at first, but I watched it a second time, and I sort of got into the zen of it. And now I sort of understood it a lot more. So
yeah, I was going to say, I remember we watched it the same week and came in with our review, and you were sort of bashing it a little bit.
I was.
You weren't so big on it, but you watched it a second time and enjoyed it.
I did, but there's 9 other movies above it.
Yes.
So it you know, ranks in at a number 10 for me.
And I believe that's streaming instantly on Netflix, yes?
It is. It's the best documentary I saw this year.
All right. I got one on my list coming up later. At number 10, though, Matt, I have Looper.
I'm glad it's on your list.
I love me some intelligent sci-fi time travel films. Plus, we have the added bonus of Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing a young Bruce Willis, which was
a
total blast. And I believe that the film will only get better on multiple spins. I have only seen it the one time in the theater, but I can already tell like I'm eager to watch it a second time. And anything with time travel that's done right, 2-3 spins, you really start to probably appreciate it even more so.
Sure.
So number 10, Looper for me. What do you got at 9?
At 9, I have Prometheus. While for the most part...
Wow, yeah. This has not been showing up on many people's top 10, Matt.
No.
Explain yourself.
I will explain myself. I think that while for the most part, it was a bit of a disappointment because we all went in with these preconceived notions that this was an Alien prequel. When you look at the film as a standalone... It's great, and that one scene with Nomi Rapace, and you know which scene I'm talking about.
Sure.
Everyone does. You don't even have to say anything other than that one scene.
That was worth the price of the ticket.
Oh my God. That was seriously like one of the best scenes filmed in 2012. It really was.
Yeah, I don't know. I was very disappointed with it. I'm shocked that it came up on your top 10.
It's that scene that really put it on this list.
All right, number 9. That's good. At number 9 for me, Matt, I have a film I reviewed a week ago, I believe, The Impossible.
Is that like a sequel to The Incredibles?
No.
Oh.
This is Naomi Watts with the incredible performance in here. The story is going to bring you to tears, Matt, not to mention scare you with some of the most realistic film scenes of a natural disaster. Again, this is the family vacationing in Thailand.
Sounds too scary. That kind of stuff, ugh. I don't know.
Definitely check it out, though. It's in the theaters now. I really have to say it's Naomi Watts or Jessica Chastain for Best Actress this year. It's a two-horse race going down the stretch, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if Naomi Watts wins it for The Impossible. But bring some Kleenex. It's a tearjerker, Matt.
Yeah.
We're into our 8s.
So at number 8, I have Lawless. I know you'd love this movie.
Come on.
No, this was great.
Wow.
See, what I liked about it, for Tom Hardy and Shia LaBeouf, what I liked about it most is we see the gangster angle.
Diarrhea of the eyeballs.
No, listen to me. We see the gangster, like, urban angle of the Prohibition era all the time. This was the first movie to really look at the rural side of things, where the moonshine was coming from, you know? I thought it was really interesting, and I love Tom Hardy in this movie.
Yeah, like I said, he talked like Bane throughout the film.
He was Bane!
I know, but he talks too much like him. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
That's like saying you talk too much like Rye the Movie Guy.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what Bane had, this mask over his face and such. Well, he sounded just like that, all muffled up. I couldn't understand
him. He's a mumbler.
And then, too, Shia LaBeouf stuck out like a sore thumb. But I do give you credit that we don't see enough stories when it comes to the Prohibition era of the foothills, you know, out in Virginia. I did like all that kind of stuff.
That was pretty cool.
Boy, oh boy. I got to beg to differ with you there. All right. My number eight, I have Ang Lee's Life of Pi. And Ang Lee gives us a visual masterpiece. The story of a boy and a tiger named Richard Parker was a fascinating look at religions and faith. Didn't think it was going to go there, and what an ending in the movie. Really touched me, and I think you have to see it in 3D. I know one of the jawheads that follows us on Twitter was asking around if they should see the film in 3D, and I told him it's a must.
Yeah,
I very seldom recommend 3D because I'm not a huge fan, but this is a film you should seek out in 3D. It actually does something for the film.
Now, is this still playing downtown here?
I believe at AMC 21.
Okay.
Check it out. My number eight, Life of Pi.
I like it. So at number seven, I have the most recent entry in the James Bond series, Skyfall. While I don't think it's the strongest James Bond movie ever, it was this year's James Bond movie, so it absolutely belongs on my top 10 list. I love James Bond, so Skyfall was good.
I was trying to squeeze this one on there. It was between that and Looper for my number 10 because I love Skyfall as well. The ending, it just isn't as strong as the first two-thirds of the film.
Yeah.
But I did love the villain as well.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem.
I wish he could play the villain in every other movie. I'd have no qualms with that.
When they have him in the cage and he takes his jawbone out, is like a prosthetic.
Yeah.
That was a great special effect.
It was.
I mean, he is such a crazy looking villain in this movie.
And in fact, I actually remember after we saw it, I commented to my girlfriend, Jen, I wish they would have took the jaw piece out a couple more times, or at least a second time near the end of the film, because it freaked me out. I loved it.
I'm like, what's he? Oh, man, that's messed up.
Nice pick. At seven, I have the Quentin Tarantino spaghetti western Django Unchained.
Also on my list.
I have a feeling it's going to come up a little bit higher on Matt's list, yes. But I do say here Tarantino does it again, this time with a harsh look at slavery, too.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's been a lot of controversy going around that maybe used the N-word too much. Interview I just saw with him on Nightline, he says, if you went back in that time in Mississippi, that's how people talked, you know. And he just sort of, as you like to say, didn't pull any punches. He just showed it for what it was.
I agree. I think for the most part, he struck the balance there pretty well. But I don't know. He likes to drop the N-bomb a lot.
He does. And you know, I've mentioned many a times DiCaprio and Christoph Waltz are fabulous in here. But also, I got to give credit to Samuel L. Jackson, who gives us a great character in here.
Oh, yeah. Sam Jackson was great in it.
Yeah. So that was my number seven, Django Unchained.
And number six, I have The Dark Knight Rises. Christopher Nolan's cap on his trilogy of the Dark Knight trilogy. And although, again, I don't think it was as good as Dark Knight, it was good. You know, it was an epic Batman movie. Sign me up. You know, I'm there.
What absolutely stuns me is that it took us to get to number six for you to list a superhero movie.
Oh, just wait.
Elias, if you could keep track of Matt's superhero movies, he has one so far.
From here on out.
At number six, Matt, I have Silver Linings Playbook. A great dramedy seems to be as difficult to find in Hollywood as Matthew McConaughey in a shirt. This movie had great characters. Cooper, Lawrence, De Niro, Jackie Weaver are all fabulous. It's a great story. It's one that you can laugh with, but has emotion to it. It's a feel-good movie at the end. Obviously, it just got nominated for a slew of Academy Awards, and I think it deserves it. I loved Silver Linings Playbook. It's a great one.
I'm in. And number five.
And these are the heavy hitters now, our top fives.
Yeah, this is top five. This one's going to be controversial and maybe maybe shock some people.
Why? It didn't come out this year?
No, it came out in 2012. The Amazing Spider-Man.
Whoa!
I did not think it was going to be this good. It was fantastic. I mean, it really made us say, or at least me say, Toby who?
I wouldn't go that far.
No, Andrew Garfield was such a better Peter Parker. And they got the story right. You know, starting off with Gwen Stacy and all of that stuff. We'll touch that later. We'll touch that later when we get to our favorite deaths. Great movie. Loved it.
Yeah, I will say I was shocked that it was as good as it was.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't say that it totally puts the other ones to shame. I would actually say that it stands alone as is. I still like Spider-Man 1 and 2, and I think Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire is the best Spider-Man out there.
Yeah,
still.
I think you're right. But this one was better than the first one.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's right now it stands as the second best Spider-Man film.
They're off to a good start.
They are.
All right. At number five, I have Oh, did I love this movie, and I haven't reviewed it on Cinema Jaw. The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I think that is Elias's future wife.
Yes,
is that
definitely.
Right?
I perked up when you said that, actually. No, but I missed it. I want to see it.
So. I am a sucker for a good coming-of-age film, and this one knocks it out of the park. I love this movie. Emma Watson, Ezra Miller, who plays Kevin, who played Kevin in We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Wonder Years.
No. He played Kevin in We Need to Talk About Kevin, which I loved, and he was super dark. Here he plays like a gay teenager. He is awesome. Also, Logan Lerman, who plays Charlie. Oh, man. Awesome writing. Great soundtrack. Like I say, I'm a sucker for these coming-of-age movies, and this one was just... made me feel good coming out of the theater.
That sounds good. Plus, Emma Watson's in it, and that's never a bad thing.
No, sure isn't.
All right, so at number four, I have what I would say is probably this past year's best animated feature, and for my money, I think it was Wreck-It Ralph.
Number four, Matthew.
Number four, yeah.
Wow.
First of all, I love animation. Wow. I love animation.
Wow.
After zombies and superheroes, animation is probably my next favorite, and then documentary. But yeah, I really, it was so sweet, you know?
It
literally, I got choked up at the end. And let's not forget, although technically it's a different movie, that little short film at the beginning of Wreck-It Ralph with the paper airplane, it was just a great experience going to the movies. I saw it in 3D. I thought the 3D worked really well in this movie too. Tying it in with all the video games also appealed to my inner child, and I just loved it, man. It was a great movie.
I'm not disappointed that it's on your top 10, but that it's at number four. Come on, Matt.
Maybe it's a little high. Maybe.
Wow.
But, you know, I wanted to highlight it because I feel that it was one of the few original breakout movies of the year. And I love John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman. Great performances.
Especially Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman. Yeah, I think it belongs on the list. Maybe it is a little high.
All right. Over at my number four, we have the Ben Affleck directed Argo. Although it is Hollywoodized, Matt, Affleck pulls together a tense thriller here. Obviously, it's about the hostages that they get out by posing as a fake film crew, and the movie that they are producing is called Argo. Alan Arkin is great in here, John Goodman. Ben Affleck, very serviceable on screen, but what he does directing-wise, I mean, he had me on the edge of my seat at the end of this film, and I love that kind of action. Yeah. I love when you don't know if they're going to get away, are they going to get caught, they're in the airport, all just timed out perfectly on screen.
Well, we kind of knew because it's a historical thing.
Right, and you know, this movie and obviously Zero Dark Thirty, yeah. And there was another one that I had on my list.
This is 40?
where you know what's going to happen at the end,
yeah,
is sort of a tricky thing to pull off by a director to make it as tense as some of them turn out to be, because we already know how it's going to end, yet I'm sitting there,
yeah,
biting my nails wondering if they're going to get out of the airport alive. It's,
yeah,
it's a great achievement. So that's why I have Argo at number four.
All right, so that brings us to three.
Whoa.
At number three, speaking of original movies, I have Ted. I thought that this was probably the funniest movie of the year.
Yes.
I can't think of one that I would put above it. It's an anthropomorphic teddy bear voiced by Seth MacFarlane and playing opposite Mila Kunis and Mark Wahlberg, who are absolutely great. I think we've highlighted the hooker poop scene before in a previous episode of Cinema Jaw.
But can we play it one more time?
Yeah, let's. We're going to play that right now.
Oh, God.
Oh, what?
Oh, this is so gross.
Don't tell me. I don't want to hear about it.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't get it.
Look, that was a tough night for all of us.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, dude. I mean,
hooker hilarious, poop is, man.
It's always funny. So, yeah. So, Ted's my number three.
Nice. I had it on an honorable mention. I would have liked to squeeze it like at a number 10 for me. Good pick. At number three, I have a documentary, Matt, that's a small documentary. I know it played in very few theaters in the country. It is entitled Searching for Sugar Man.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I still got to see this.
I love this film. It's a documentary about the artist Rodriguez. It's easily the most amazing story of the year, and instead of just resting on that fact, the filmmakers unfold the story on screen to make it even more remarkable. At first, they're talking about the mystique of the artist Rodriguez, and how he was probably a better songwriter than Bob Dylan, and people compared him to all these greats, and then there was this myth that he died on stage. And nobody knows that over in South Africa, he's actually more popular than the Beatles and Elvis Presley. And nor does he know this. And watching it all unfold on screen is just remarkable. And
now he's on tour.
Yeah, now he's on tour. He's just played the House of Blues here in Chicago, sold out. Rodriguez music is featured throughout the film. His album Cold Fact now sits on my shelf at home.
Is it good?
It's great. It's awesome music. It's so great that not only is it an amazing story, but it's great that they uncovered this artist for people like me. And if you don't know the story, I actually think it's better to go in blinded. I knew nothing about this movie going in. I didn't even know what it was about. And I think the less you know about it, the better.
Okay.
Number three, Searching for Sugar Man.
And number two, I have, you know what, there's two movies you know are going to be on this list. One we already mentioned, the other one we haven't yet, so which one do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be the one we already mentioned.
Yes, you're right, Django Unchained. I think Quentin Tarantino knocked it out of the park here. We've already discussed it enough. I mean, for all the reasons I mentioned before, it's good. And you know what? I think the controversy behind it is going to kind of keep people talking about it a little bit more. And maybe he did that on purpose. I don't know. It's arguable. But this one's going to be one, you know, we're going to have on our shelves for a long time.
Nice pick. Nice pick. At number two, Matt, I go, boy, everybody knows I'm a favorite. They were waiting how high I was going to have this movie. I have Wes Anderson's Moonrise Kingdom.
Again, I'm surprised it's not number one.
Let me tell you, Matt, Wes Anderson tells stories about first love really well. Outstanding cast here. Ed Norton, Bruce Willis, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand. Yet it's Jared Gilman and Kara Hayward who play young Sam and Susie who steal the show. Love this movie. He captures that same type of first love feeling that we had in Rushmore with Max Fisher. Captures it here times three, I think, because you have two young kids in love for the first time. They're on this island by themselves. And, of course, all the quirkiness that we love of Wes Anderson comes out, too.
Would you put this one above Rushmore?
Again, definitely Wes Anderson's one you have to watch all his movies a couple of times to really appreciate him. And I've only had the chance to see Moonrise Kingdom once. I did get it for Christmas. Santa knew that I wanted it on Blu-ray, and I got it at home. But I have yet to crack that one open. But
what do you think?
One spin in, it's definitely upper echelon Wes Anderson is what I would say. It's up there.
So it's not quite Rushmore, but it's like a Steve Zuzu kind of thing?
I think it might be better than The Life Aquatic.
Okay.
So that was my number two, Moonrise Kingdom. We are into our number ones. Matt, I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. Is there any doubt in your mind?
I have absolutely no clue what you're going to have at number one.
The best movie of the year was The Avengers.
Oh!
And I'm not alone on that.
Oh, yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Also,
best movie of the year?
Yeah, you know what?
Oh, bull.
Hey, the market votes with their wallets, and it was the number one at the box office.
Oh, a box office. You're an asswipe.
Hey, man. People liked it, dude. I'm a person.
I knew you were going to have this, you jagbag.
It's the best movie of the year.
Wow.
What was it? It wasn't Moonrise Kingdom. What was the best movie of the year, Rye?
Best movie of the year. I just reviewed it on this episode. Even though Elias wasn't a huge fan, I'm giving it to Zero Dark Thirty.
Really? God.
Timely.
You fell for the propaganda.
Poignant, well told. Bigelow gives us a tense masterpiece here. I just absolutely loved it. And you know what, too? I wanted to comment during the review. The movie, I think, has a runtime of like 2 hours and 40 minutes, 2 hours and 35 minutes. I felt like I was in the theater for a half hour, for me. I was stunned how late it was because we had to be somewhere like in the afternoon. I saw this like a first screen at like 10:15 in the morning. I looked at my watch after it was over. Oh, my God, this went 2.5 hours. To me, it felt like it was 15 minutes I was sitting in that chair. That's a real good sign of a tense thrill ride.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, no doubt it's probably going to wind up being an important film, but is it better than The Avengers? I don't think so.
Wow. The Avengers number one for Matt. A big shocker, right? Yeah, right. All right, before we get to break, though, I wanted to highlight a couple other things of 2012. We'll have a little fun. And I picked out three hidden gems. Matt picked out three of his favorite death scenes. I'll go at my hidden gems first, Matt.
Lay it on me.
And at number three, I have Killer Joe.
Could also be a best death scene there.
Yes. Yeah. Killer Joe, I saw the play here written by Tracy Letts of Steppenwolf. It's phenomenal live, and I didn't know how it was going to translate onto the big screen. And I have to say, Matthew McConaughey, the shirtless wonder, knocks it out of the park as Killer Joe. Check that one out. Also, a film I reviewed a couple episodes ago, out on DVD, very tough to find, though. I actually had to get it from the library. Blockbuster doesn't even carry it. Netflix doesn't have it. Thin Ice, with Greg Kinnear, Billy Crudup, Alan Arkin. This is the one where Kinnear wants to steal the violin from the old guy.
It's the Bag of Babies one, right?
And no, that's different. That's old. That's Frozen River. Yeah. But Thin Ice.
Close.
Yeah, Thin Ice is Kinnear is an insurance guy that wants to steal this valuable violin and sell it. Billy Crudup plays an alarm guy who wants in on the deal, and all hell breaks loose. A guy dies. It's sort of Fargo-esque. Definitely check out Thin Ice. And the number one hidden gem of 2012. All of these are out on DVD. Your Sister's Sister. This one almost could have been on my top 10. Mark Duplass is in it. Emily Blunt. It's a comedy, you know, and it's very simple. I love when a simple movie of a guy hooking up with a girl when another girl really likes him, and yet it can be told so well and entertaining. The characters are great. It's funny. It's touching. It ends. It's like, my God, that was one of the better movies of the year, and no one's really talking about it. Check out Your Sister's Sister. Everybody will love this one.
Cool.
Those are my three favorite hidden gems. Matt, what about death scenes?
Yeah,
some good ones.
Yeah, some great death scenes this year at the movies. And I want to warn the Jawheads that some of these are fairly recent, so spoiler alert. If you haven't seen these films, you might want to fast forward a minute.
Wait, what do I do? I can't fast forward.
You're screwed. You're screwed.
All right, lay them
on me. Just get in the box and pull the cover on real tight.
Yeah, slam that thing shut loud.
All right, so, and I'll go in reverse order here. My number three is the death of Calvin Candy in Django.
It came
right out of left field. I mean, I guess I kind of knew he was going to have to die, but I didn't see it coming, although I should have, knowing Christoph Waltz's character's favorite weapon of choice. But it was a good death scene, and the absolute melee that it ensued was fantastic.
Sure was. Great one there, Matt.
Oh, bloodbath. Bloodbath. So my number two would have to be one of the heaviest deaths in comic book history, and that was the death of Captain Stacy at the end of Spider-Man. And, you know, it's not often that one of the heroes dies, so I felt it really had a gravitas to it.
And this was played by
I'm an asshole singer himself, Dennis Leary. And I thought that he did great. You know, he's a comedian, so playing a more dramatic role, although I guess he's had a lot of acting experience at this point, he did really well with it. So my number one death scene technically isn't a death scene, but it would have killed any natural human being. And I'm talking about the end of the Avengers.
Oh, man.
Please, that was so great. Everyone in the theater thought that that was amazing. And I know that thousands of people love this moment when the Hulk grabs Loki by the ankle and he just smashes him again and again on the ground. That was so cool. I mean, he should have died, you know, but he's a god, so he didn't die. But it was close.
Those are some good ones right there.
Yeah. Those are my death scenes.
Yeah. Jawheads, if you're listening to this at home and you have pulled up, if you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know your favorite death scene. We'll retweet them out to the other Jawheads and see what everybody thinks.
Yeah. And I only picked the popular ones. I didn't go for the horror movies and stuff like that I know that you haven't seen Rise.
Right.
There's a lot out there.
And one other category we wanted to highlight was our top three favorite movie lines. It's always fun to go back and some of these poignant lines, if you will, that jump out at you from the films. At number three, I'll get us started here. I have from Jackie Coogan, played by Brad Pitt, in Killing Them Softly, which didn't make anybody's top 10 list, but it's near the end of the film. It is the last line of the film. He says, "This guy wants to tell me we're living in a community. Don't make me laugh. I'm living in America. And in America, you're on your own. America's not a country. It's just a business. Now fucking pay me."
Yeah.
That was awesome. It really summed up the entire movie right there in one line. And I think I said in my review when I reviewed it, I just pumped my fist in the air going out of the theater.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
What do you got at number two, Matt?
You know, the one that I've been waiting years and years to finally hear somebody say on the silver screen, Hulk smash.
Oh,
no,
wow.
It was the quote of the summer, man. Hulk smash.
That is your third reference to the Avengers.
It won't be my last, dude.
Oh, my goodness.
We're talking 2012 was the year of the Avengers.
Hulk smash.
Yes, you're damn straight. Hulk smash. I mean, Shakespeare could not have done better.
I thought everybody was cheering. I thought they said the Hulk is smashed, like he was drunk.
Yeah, he's probably drunk, too. Actually, there's a really good Twitter account called Drunk Hulk. Everyone should go follow it right now. It's freaking hilarious.
All right. And our number one favorite movie line comes from The Perks of Being a Wallflower. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's also one of the last lines of the movie, and it comes from the main character, Charlie, and he says...
Hulk smash.
Yes, he says, Hulk smash.
Nice.
No, Charlie says, I'm here, and I'm looking at her, and she is so beautiful. I can see it. This one moment, when you know you're not a sad story, you are alive, and you stand up and see the lights on the building and everything that makes you wonder, and you're listening to that song, that drive with the people you love most in this world. And in this moment, I swear, we are infinite. Ah, it was awesome. What a way to end. Just a great, great movie. Definitely check out The Perks of Being a Wallflower. I loved it.
That's a great line, man.
It is.
It's no Hulk smash, but it's...
We have that from The Perks of Being a Wallflower, or we have Hulk smash from Matt on The Avengers.
See, you can tell where this this whole thing comes into play, this yes. dichotomy here.
Yes, this is why we do this every week.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
If you have a favorite line from 2012, shoot us a tweet, again, at CinemaJaw. Let us know what it is, and we will retweet it. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and it should be mentioned, one time about four episodes ago, our engineer, we were introducing him, came on to play Matt, and we actually thought this will be funny because Matt will just kill Elias in movie trivia. But oh no, Elias upset Matt. Matt was just beside himself and said, I want a rematch, so we're giving Matt a second crack at Elias.
You're going down.
And in honor of Broken City, starring Russell Crowe and Mark Wahlberg, we are playing Russell Crowe, Mark Wahlberg movie trivia.
Ooh, I actually have a fighting chance here.
Oh boy, I'm nervous. I didn't think I was going to win last time, so who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Silver Linings Playbook became only the 14th film to ever receive at least one Oscar nomination in each of the four acting categories, and it is the first movie to do so in 31 years, the last film being Warren Beatty's epic drama Reds in 1981. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, Matt.
Ah.
Celebrating the year 2012 over a few cold PBRs.
Yes, as always. Yes. As always, Rye. Well, not always 2012, but always the cold PBR.
It brings us to a segment we call...
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest this week, Elias the Engineer, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads at home who he thinks won this cinema war. And it's important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. We prepare these rants, and I want to win so I can rant. Matt wants to win so he can rant about the damn Avengers some more.
Yep.
Now, the Oscar nominations just came out. There were snubs aplenty. We're looking at two of the biggest snubs. Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's cinema war topic is.
Today's cinema war topic is... With the Oscar nominations announced, which is the bigger snub? No Leo DiCaprio for supporting actor, or no Ben Affleck for best director? Matt, you'll be fighting for DiCaprio. Rye, you'll be fighting for Affleck. Let the cinema war begin.
Matt, usually the Academy pisses all over themselves when it comes to an actor turned director. Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Robert Redford are just some of the examples. Affleck's effort with Argo was clearly worthy of a nomination. Come on.
Argo was a great movie, superbly directed, but it is not on par with the brilliant performance of Leonardo DiCaprio as Calvin Candy. Could he have been more despicable? That is the biggest Oscar snub by far.
Argo, much like Zero Dark Thirty, Matt, suffers due to the fact that the audience already knows what happens, yet Affleck somehow turned Argo into a tense nail-biter. I loved it.
You know, like I said, Affleck is good. Perhaps one day he will be great, but he is not in the same universe as Quentin Tarantino. Tarantino's dialogue and characterizations are second to none. DiCaprio is a world-class actor. Put those two together, it's the way bigger snub, man.
I truly thought, though, Matt, that Affleck's track record would have earned him a nomination here. As with each one of his movies, he keeps getting better as a director, from Gone Baby Gone to The Town and now to Argo. Plus, Hollywood loves a comeback. I mean, 9 years ago, he was starring in that crap fest, Jaliji. How do you say it?
Who cares?
I tell ya. And now look at the guy. He deserved a nom.
He did, but not as bad as DiCaprio. In 5 years, we'll still be talking about Django, while Argo will be largely forgotten. In fact, It kind of already has.
Yeah, but get a load of this, Matt. Argo received 7 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Supporting Actor, and Adapted Screenplay. He obviously did something right. He actually just won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Director. He won it. And he is no longer with Jennifer Lopez. What gives? This man was robbed.
Rye, you can bitch and moan for Affleck all you want, and I think he probably did deserve a nomination, but there is no question that DiCaprio did more for Django. It was Oscar-caliber performance in an Oscar-caliber film by an Oscar-winning director, period.
Whoa, we are button heads as always.
This one's tough, honestly.
I tell you, it is. I mean, both were obviously snubbed big time. We throw it over to Elias. What'd you think of this Cinema War?
Going with the arguments, I'm going to have to give this one to Rye.
Yes! Yes! He ends Matt's streak at 1.
Yeah. That third point was really good.
He had some great points about how Hollywood pisses themselves. And, you know, Matt, one of your earlier points was who's more despicable than DiCaprio's character. And I would argue that Sam Jackson is more despicable.
Okay, you got a good point there. Good point.
Yeah, I agree. Those are both huge snubs. But Rye wins argument.
Thank you. And I'm going to use my 20 seconds here, Matt, to talk to the Academy directly.
About the Avengers?
Yeah, and why didn't the Avengers get nominated?
It's clearly Best Picture.
Yes. All right, Matt. I'm going to use my 20 seconds of jaw time to just talk about how I can't stand how much praise Lincoln is getting. Did not make either one of our top 10s. I saw the film and I thought, very well done. I mean, no doubt technically and historically accurate, but to give it 14 nominations or whatever it got, a little bit too much for me. I don't think Lincoln deserves to be the movie of the year.
Snooze fest. I agree with you for a change.
Wow, this is a shocker.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get to trivia.
You know what Lincoln needed? The Hulk.
He won't stop at this point, folks. He will not stop. Before we get to trivia.
You know what else doesn't stop, Rye? The Hulk.
Oh, boy.
I could keep this going. That was the fourth time it'll be funny again.
Yeah, okay. But before we get to trivia, yourself in a rematch against Elias in Mark Wahlberg, Russell Crowe movie trivia. One DVD review for you, The Queen of Versailles. This documentary tells the story of millionaire David Siegel and his family during the recession. The Siegel family was in the process of building the largest, most expensive single-family home in the United States when the financial crisis hit. The movie exposes the problems that got us into this mess and why it is such a slow recovery. At the same time, it shows us a family coping with their new struggles and just how clouded some of them really are. There is a little something here for everyone, but being a person who actually loathe reality television, I was put off by some of the scenes. I hate when people say or act a certain way when they know the cameras are rolling. If nothing else, it is interesting. Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 2 Jaws, grade of a C+ for me. And this might be a shocker because some people, this actually our friend Matt Pace, who reviews film for the Chicago Tribune's Red Eye, had this as his number 2 movie of the year, to give you an idea. So people love this. It's streaming on Netflix.
What's it called?
The Queen of Versailles.
Okay.
I gave it a spin. A lot of people love it. I only gave it a C. I'd like to see what you thought after you catch it.
I'll watch it tonight.
There you go. We are up to trivia. Last time this went down, this matchup, our engineer Elias took down Matt in movie trivia. And now it was a shocker.
I got a double vendetta now because you gave the Cinema War win to Ryan.
Well, I might have had beginner's luck, so who knows? We'll see.
I think so.
In honor of Broken City, we are playing Russell Crowe, Mark Wahlberg movie trivia. Elias, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you get stuck on one, just say, "Rescue me, Ryan," and I'll help you out with a clue.
I will let Matt go first.
Ooh, okay. What a gentleman. Question number 1 over to Matt K. In 2001, Russell Crowe played John Nash in A Beautiful Mind. What actress played his wife, Alicia, in the film, a role which won her an Academy Award?
That would be Jennifer Connelly.
1-0, Matt K. And it was a shocker. I didn't think he would know. Question number 2 over to Elias. Mark Wahlberg played a fisherman alongside George Clooney and John C. Reilly in this special effects heavy film from the year 2000.
The Perfect Storm.
We have a perfect score. 1-1.
All right.
Question number 3 over to Matt K. Russell Crowe and Burt Reynolds starred in this movie about a small town hockey team that plays the New York Rangers in a hockey game outside.
Miracle?
Wow, we throw it over to Elias.
Oh, man.
You do have a lifeline, one rescue. Russell Crowe and Burt Reynolds starred in this movie about a small-town hockey team that plays the New York Rangers in a hockey game outside.
Wasn't Mike Myers one of the announcers in that game randomly? Because it was all about hockey, but I don't know the name of the movie.
We were looking for Mystery Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
Mystery Alaska.
Yeah. Not up on my hockey
Pretty
movies.
Sure he is, anyway.
Still 1-1, but this question now is over to Elias. In 2001's Rockstar, Mark Wahlberg played Chris Cole. Which actress played his girlfriend, Emily?
Oh, boy, I have no freaking idea, and I don't know if I want to use my rescue.
Oh, well, I think you do. I think you do. Usually, we're at question four.
Usually I have the answers in front of me, so it's a lot easier to pay attention to the trivia. But question four, let's see, then I will, Rescue Me Ryan.
Oh, Rescue Me Ryan. What was the name of that actress in Rockstar? And your clue is not Monica or Phoebe. Your clue is not Monica or Phoebe.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Wait. Oh, okay. Jennifer Aniston? Yeah.
Well done. Yeah, well nice. Done.
I was thinking like Phoebe Cates for some reason. I don't know. What was going
2-1, Elias. He takes the lead. Come on, Matt. I'm cheering for you for once.
I would have known that one.
Question number five. Crow played a boxer in 2005's Cinderella Man. Who played his manager, Joe Gold?
Was that Paul Giamatti?
Damn.
Yes.
Ties it up at two. Wow. You can cut the tension with a knife. Question number six, over to Elias. In 2003, Crow played a British ship captain in this movie that mainly took place on the open seas.
Master and Commander.
Wow, he is rolling. He is rolling. It is 3-2. Matt, you do have a rescue left. Question number seven. In 2010, Russell Crowe played a plump Robin in Robin Hood. Who directed the film?
Who directed Robin Hood? So there's an eighth question. If he gets it right, does he win?
Yeah.
If I get this one right?
Well, currently he's winning 3-2. You gotta answer this one correct for
wait,
sure.
But wait a second,
just to
though.
Tie it.
How's that possible?
It is.
All right, we'll examine this after. Rescue Me, Ryan.
Rescue Me, Ryan. Who directed 2010's Robin Hood? And your clue is his brother recently jumped off a bridge.
Oh, okay. Ridley Scott.
Well done. Matt ties it up at three. Wow. Ties it up at three.
So, but it's, I didn't get any wrong.
Yeah, the one you got wrong was Mystery Alaska.
No, or you didn't get it, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't get it. It was over to you. You didn't get it, either did he.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right, we'll examine this after.
Right. I know I'm right. It's 3-3. Elias can win it on a walk-off right here. Here you go, Elias. Question number eight. Mark Wahlberg starred in M. Night Shyamalan's 2008 flop, The Happening, but what actress played his wife, Alma?
Oh, man.
What actress played Mark Wahlberg's wife in 2008's The Happening?
I don't know. I just don't
You got
know.
A guess? You could take a guess for the win.
I don't know. No, nothing. Nothing's coming.
No Emma Watson?
Yeah, I know. Right?
Boy, oh boy. Matt, you got a chance to walk this one right off. I think you've seen the movie.
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, boy. What actress played Mark Wahlberg's wife in M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening?
Why do I want to say Gwyneth Paltrow?
Your clue would have been she's a new girl.
I don't.
Zoe Deschanel.
Oh, man.
Zoe Deschanel Damn. Played his wife. We are tied at three. It goes to a jawbreaker.
Wow.
Matt, who wins in a street fight? Mark Wahlberg or Russell Crowe?
The Hulk. See, told you.
Absolutely wrong. Street fight. Who do you got? Mark Wahlberg or Russell Crowe?
Wow, that's a good street fight. I think Crow's a little past his prime. I give this one to Marky Mark.
It would have been Russell Crowe, actually. Yes, no doubt about it.
I don't know. He bulked up for that 90s movie, Mark Wahlberg, coming up. That you know.
Yes.
So, I don't know.
It's a good fight, though.
I'd like to watch that one. The real jawbreaker is this. Matt, age of Russell Crowe. This is for the win.
51 years old.
Elias, lock him in at 51. All right, Elias.
Damn, 51. I'm going to go.
My guess.
46.
We give this one to Elias. He's 48.
Woo! Do you believe in miracles?
Unbelievable. It is 2-0. No, he's only 2 off. You're 3
I'm
off.
3 off. Yeah.
Oh, there wow. you go. Matt's sitting there trying to figure it in his head.
I did the math, yeah.
Wow.
Well done.
Well done. Elias is 2-0 against Matt K.
At least it was a good ball game here.
And, I wanted to mention, we received a tweet from a jawhead, Mark Hearn, who gave a great idea of keeping tallies of the Cinema War wins.
Well, we used to, yeah.
No, Cinema War, me and you each okay. week. And winning this week ties it up 1 apiece in 2013. Great idea, Mark. We're going to be keeping track the rest of the year.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, the last time I won, somebody tweeted that I won because of TV clues. All my rescues were clues from TVs. and this one today was also a TV clue that I got. So.
Weird.
I'm glad I didn't get the Zooey Deschanel clue because I would have, yeah.
Wouldn't have got it.
Yeah, well.
Well done, though, Elias. Well done. Right. Oh, boy. Brings us to the end of a great jaw here, Matt.
Yeah, indeed.
We got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to the new 400 theaters.
Yes, we'll be there tomorrow. Full liquor bar. If you're up in the Rogers Park area of Chicago, check out the new 400 theaters. See what's playing there at the new400.com. It's an excellent theater.
And we thank them for their support.
And also MoviePass. Check out MoviePass/CinemaJaw. Enter the code CinemaJaw and save $15 on your first month. Awesome, awesome plan there.
Yeah, unlimited movies. Right. What can you say?
I know. And also, thanks to our engineer, the great Elias Rodriguez. Yes.
Thanks for letting me chime in today, guys.
So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.